7.
Can you trust me my eyeballs first?
Your what?
My glasses.
Oh, them are yours?
Yes.
Well, I won't cost. That's all right. I leave mine everywhere.
If, hey, not for nothing, I got several pair. Ace Hardware's got them a dollar a pair for the readers right now, Mark. If you need any 225s, 150s, I went in, I bought four pair the other day. I hope they got a few left for somebody else. Got one on my truck, I got one on my end table, I got one on my desk, one of my, you know, you got to keep several pair. The book of Esther, where we just read in chapter 6, about Haman, and, you know, Haman was sure the king was going to honor him. So he said, this is what you ought to do to him. He's so full of himself, so full of pride. But what had happened earlier is Esther had invited the king and Haman to a banquet. And then she invited him to another banquet. And then that's where she told the king that Haman had sought to kill Mordecai and all the Jews. So she goes in, then after that, the king couldn't sleep. So, but between these, there was two banquets. Esther had two banquets. Between the two banquets, the king asked her after the other one, what do you want, Esther? Well, she didn't tell him. She says, come tomorrow night, we'll have another banquet. So, and invite Haman. So she did. And so the king, that night, the king could not sleep. And the book of the records of the Chronicles were read to the king. And the two guys that are mentioned in chapter 6, in verse 2, where it says, Bigthanah and Teresh, they were mentioned. And the king said, Mordecai, I'll tell you this later, Mordecai ratted those two guys out. They wanted to kill the king. And so the king finally said, well, what'd we do for Mordecai? They didn't do anything for Mordecai. So that's why, when you read in chapter 6, Haman thought he was talking about him, but the king was actually talking about Mordecai. That's why he said, okay, go get Mordecai. And now here's, I think God's got a sense of humor. Can you see Haman, who absolutely despises Mordecai, lead him all around, put all this fancy clothes and all this stuff on him? I mean, Haman wasn't happy. But I'd have liked the bed narrative just to see that. It's almost like God has a sense of humor. So that's kind of a little bit of the background to where you are. You ought to go back and just read the first 7 chapters here. But anyway, chapter 7 ends with this. Haman had gallows built to hang Mordecai on. Chapter 7 ends in verse 10. And they hanged Haman on the gallows that he had prepared for Mordecai. Then was the king's wrath pacified. So Haman got killed on the thing that he wanted to hang Mordecai on. That was his plan. He wanted all the Jews killed. So now we want to look at chapter 8 here. A lot of people end right there and leave the story off right there, but chapter 8 begins. On that day did King Ahasuerus give the house of Haman, the Jews' enemy, unto Esther, the queen. And Mordecai came before the king, for Esther had told what he was unto her. And the king took, they were related. Esther, I think you see the providence of God all over the book of Esther. Esther's parents died. That's how she ended up in Mordecai's house, to live with them. And they're Jews. And the king took off his ring, which he had taken from Haman, and gave it unto Mordecai. And Esther set Mordecai over the house of Haman. So with the death of Haman, a great change came over the Persian court and over the Persian country, really. Mordecai was made the prime minister. And all Haman's property was given to Queen Esther. She appointed Mordecai to be the guardian over all that property. And by the way, there was 127 provinces in Persia at that time. But there's still a problem. Even though Haman is gone, there's still a problem. Look at verse 3. Esther spake yet again before the king and fell down at his feet and besought him with tears to put away the mischief of Haman the Agagite and his device that he had devised against the Jews. Then the king held out the golden scepter toward Esther. So Esther arose and stood before the king and said, if it please the king, and if I have found favor in his sight, and the thing seem right before the king, and I be pleasing in his eyes, and she was, Let it be written to reverse the letters devised by Haman, the son of Hamatha, the Agagite, which he wrote to destroy the Jews, which are in all the king's provinces. He wanted them all. But how can I endure to see the evil that shall come upon my people? She was a Jew herself. Or how can I endure to see the destruction of my kindred? Here was the problem. The death of Haman, the death of Haman did not remove the threat to the Jews. Because Haman wrote that decree, but the king had given him the king's signet ring. And so when Haman wrote it, he put the king's signet ring on it, or the seal on it. So that was still in effect. Now here's a principle. One of them up on the RU board over there mentions this one. Past decisions by us or by others often have consequences that stick around for a while. So the king allowed Haman to write this decree that he did not know at the time would be against the Jews. But once Haman was hung, the decree was still there. That was the problem. The king's decree still stood, and it could not be changed. And unless something unusual happened, the entire Hebrew race would have been wiped out, including the Jews who had returned to Jerusalem, would be killed, and you'll find this date a couple times in the book of Esther, on the 13th day of the 12th month. So Esther decided to go see the king about this one more time. She'd gone to the king before. Remember when news came that all the Jews were going to be killed? And Mordecai says, you need to go talk to the king. She says, I can't go in there. And Mordecai's like, look at Esther. He's going to kill us all. And by the way, you're a Jew too? Yeah. So she had everybody pray, and they were fasting and all that stuff. And so finally, it's where she says, if I perish, I perish. So she goes in to see the king. So she'd done this before. I'll say one thing about her. She had some courage, and she had some guts to go up there before the king. This is the second time. Once again, he held out the scepter. He welcomed her in and invited her to speak with him. But this time, she didn't invite him to a banquet or a second banquet either. She didn't invite him to dinner. This time she fell on her knees before him, and with tears in her eyes, I think, she begged him to save her people. That was verse 6. She had compassion for her people. She had love for her people. So that's what she did. She didn't ask only for Mordecai and herself. She asked for everybody. Now, I want you to think about this. When you talk about God's, and I'm talking about it tonight, the providence of God, the king has a Jewish girl for a queen. The prime minister that he has over his 127 provinces is a Jew. His decree says, kill all Jews. He's between a rock and a hard. This is a tough thing for the king. So he realized that something had to be done. But he wasn't sure what in the world he was going to do. Now let's read a little further, verse 7. Then the king Ahasuerus said unto Esther the queen and to Mordecai the Jew, behold, I have given Esther the house of Haman, and him they have hanged upon the gallows, because he laid his hand upon the Jews. Write ye also for the Jews. This is what the king told Mordecai and Esther to do. You guys go write your own decrees. He kind of said, I'm not going to write anything, but you're going to write it. Write ye also for the Jews that is liketh you, in the king's name. So he gives Mordecai the king's ring this time, and seal it with the king's ring, for the writing which is written in the king's name and sealed with the king's ring may no man reverse. So basically he said, Esther and Mordecai, write one of your own in favor for the Jews, and then seal it with the king's ring and send it to all the governors of the provinces, but she could not reverse what had already been written. So that was still on the record book. Now this rolled the problem to how the Jews would be saved back on Mordecai and Esther. So these two get together and they tried to think of a way out. Now I think they prayed about this and fasted about this just like they did the first time Esther went in. James says, when you need wisdom, you're to pray and ask God for wisdom. And Esther and Mordecai, they're at the place in their life right here. They need some wisdom. Okay, God, what in the world are we going to do? You know what wisdom is? Wisdom is simply put, what is the next right thing for me to do? And Esther and Mordecai at this time in their life had to know God, what is the next right thing for me to do? They needed some wisdom. Now, look, if you would please, here in verses 9 and 10. Is Esther chapter 8 and verse 9, is this the longest verse in the Bible, you trivia people? Look how long that verse is. Which one is? I'm going to have to, you Google people, you ask Google which one is the longest verse in the Bible. This might be it. You ain't got to do it now. Okay, you can do it later, but you can let me know what the answer is. So we're going to read here a little further, verse 9. Then were the king's scribes called at that time in the third month, that is, the month of Sivan, on the third and 20th day thereof, and it was written according to all that Mordecai commanded unto the Jews, and to the lieutenants, and to the deputies, and rulers of the provinces, which are from India unto Ethiopia. This is a big area. 127 provinces into every province according to the writing thereof, and unto every people after their language, and to the Jews according to their writing, and according to their language. And he wrote in the king Ahasuerus' name, and sealed it with the king's ring, and sent letters by posts on horseback, and riders, and mules, and camels, and young dromedaries. And I have no clue what that word means, but anyway, I didn't look it up. Now, once it's written, Mordecai sends everybody out to go ahead and deliver this letter. Here's what they wrote, verse 11. Wherein the king granted the Jews, which were in every city, to gather themselves together and to stand for their life, to destroy, to slay, and to cause to perish all the power of the people and province that would assault them, both little ones and women, to take the spoil of them for a prey. Upon one day in all the provinces of King Ahasuerus, namely, upon the 13th day of the 12th month, which is the month Adar. So that was when, this is when this was all going to happen. Once it's written, Mordecai sealed it there in verse 10 with the king's ring and sent it all out. Now you could say that the Persian postal service got busy. All the people ride out of Shushan. Shushan was where the palace was. And they bore the message that was to save God's people. Now let's read a little bit further. Verse 12, upon one day in all the provinces of King Ahasuerus, namely upon the 13th day of the 12th month, which was the month Adar, the copy of the writing for a commandment to be given in every province was published unto all people, that the Jews should be ready against that day to avenge themselves on their enemies. So the posts that rode upon mules and camels went out, being hastened and pressed on by the king's commandment, and the decree was given at Shushan, the palace. Now these guys had to get busy. It would have taken several weeks for the decree to reach all the distant provinces of the empire, but it got there on time. And this day was going to come around, and the Jews were going to be ready. Pick up the verse 15. Mordecai went out from the presence of the king in royal apparel of blue and white, and with a great crown of gold, and with a garment of fine linen and purple, and the city of Shushan rejoiced, and it was glad. The Jews had light and gladness and joy and honor. And in every province and in every city, whithersoever the king's commandment and his decree came, the Jews had joy and gladness, a feast and a good day. The decree of the king to kill him was still inactive, by the way. But they are rejoicing. And many of the people of the land became Jews, for the fear of the Jews fell upon them. Now you know that this was God's plan. And what God did here, and you see it over and over in this book, is God intervened and providentially intervened in the lives of these people. You say, why did this crazy plan work? Well, in short, because God was all over it. That's why it worked. But the other answer is, the 13th day of the 12th month came, and on this day, by the king's first decree, the people of the land had every right to kill the Jews and to take their property. And a few acted on it, and when they did, the Jews were ready. They would not have been ready had Mordecai and Esther not sent that message out. But now they're ready. And all the provinces, 127 of them, and they didn't have email and postal services like we had. They all got the message. Chapter 9. Now in the 12th month, that is the month of Adar, on the 13th day of the same, that was the day that they were supposed to kill the Jews, when the king's commandment and his decree drew near to put in execution, in the day that the enemies of the Jews hoped to have power over them, though it was turned to the contrary, that the Jews had rule over them that hated them. See that? God intervened, man. The Jews gathered themselves together in their cities throughout all the province of the king Ahasuerus to lay hand on such as sought their hurt. And no man could withstand them, for the fear of them fell upon all the people. And all the rulers of the provinces and the lieutenants and the deputies and officers of the king helped the Jews because the fear of Mordecai fell upon them. For Mordecai was great in the king's house, and his fame went out throughout all the province, for this man Mordecai waxed greater and greater. Thus the Jews smote all their enemies with the stroke of the sword and slaughter and destruction, and did what they would unto those that hated them. The tide got turned. Now the result was that the day that many people feared would be a day of destruction became a day of victory. You know why that is? God intervenes, and God brings good out of bad. So we see once again that in God's wonderful ways, God guided and guarded his people and saved them from the harm that a wicked man plotted against them. And the seed of the woman was preserved from the hatred of the devil, and God's loving purpose for man's redemption moved one step nearer in his final triumph. I want you to go back just a second and look at chapter 3 and verse 13. I noticed this the last time I read through the book of Esther. You wouldn't think if you're already in the book, it'd be hard to find that page. Esther chapter 3 and verse 13, I believe. And the elders, this was the decree that Haman had written. And the letters were sent by post unto all the king's provinces to destroy, to kill, and to cause to perish. Doesn't that sound like the devil? I mean, it's just, what's it Jesus said in John 10? The thief cometh not but for destroy, to steal, to kill, and to destroy. It seems like Haman, to me, had the spirit of Antichrist in him. Now, you think, I mentioned providence, and I'll just say a few more things, I got to go. All over this book, Esther became queen. I think God supernaturally intervened in her life to become a queen. Vashti was the queen. The king, Ahasuerus, got drunk. It's kind of stupid for anybody to get drunk, but that's what he did, especially a king. Anyway, he got drunk, and he had asked Vashti to dance in front of a group of men. She said, nope, I'm not going to do it. I think she made the right decision. But in that decision, he said, you're no longer queen. I think the next day when he came to his mind, sobered up, I think he wished he'd realized, well, what about Vashti? But anyways, he had a beauty pageant, and Esther, a Jew whose parents died, is living with her cousin Mordecai, some people say uncle, some people say cousin, her relative Mordecai, and here she is, and she's one of the 127 provinces, and the king picks her to be his queen. That's the providential hand of God. He intervened in her life. Now go to chapter 2. We tried to read about these two guys earlier. Chapter 2, verse 21. In those days, while Mordecai sat in the king's gate, two of the king's chamberlains, Pigthan and Teresh, of those which kept the door, were wroth and sought to lay hands on King Ahasuerus. And the thing was known to Mordecai, who told it unto Esther the queen, and Esther certified the king thereof in Mordecai's name. And when inquisition was made of the matter, it was found out. Therefore they were both hanged on a tree, and it was written in the book of the Chronicles before the king. Mordecai ratted those two guys out. Save the king's life. We read earlier in Esther chapter 6, when the king couldn't sleep between Esther's two banquets. Is it chance that they just happened to flip to that page that had that story? I don't think so. I think that was the providence of God. And that's when the king said, what did we ever do with Mordecai for saving my life here? Well, we didn't do anything for him, king. Well, he needs to be honored. And so now he gets to become the prime minister of all those provinces. I think that was God's providence there again. Did you know the name God is not mentioned in the book of Esther? Not one time. But his providence and his hand is smeared all over it. That put Mordecai in a special place that ultimately led to Haman's death and the salvation of the Jews. And that guy hated Mordecai. I mentioned that earlier. You know why he hated Mordecai? He wouldn't bow to Haman. He wouldn't bow to Haman because he was a Jew. And Haman absolutely hated him. Now, while God's name isn't mentioned in the book, his providence and intervention is smeared all over it. Mordecai did not compromise. He did not bow down to Haman because he was a Jew. Doing the right thing brought him heartache, and it brought him trouble. And sometimes doing the right thing brings heartache, and it brings trouble. But God intervened. Now, let me remind us of something, then I'm going to leave. Through prayer, God can intervene in the affairs of mankind. We need to pray. We need to be praying people. I've talked about spiritual warfare quite a lot lately, and being victorious. People need to learn how to pray with kingdom authority and spiritual authority in their life. I don't know if you've read the news today, but they are out to get President Trump. And I mean, they are out to get him. They want him impeached. They want him out of office. These people are wicked. And I mean just wicked. When the ISIS people who are out on bail, $20,000, and they found a dead body where they were at, and yet somebody who's worked for the country for years can't get out of jail, they're just messed up, those people. And by the way, that young lady, they found her body in a cornfield in Iowa, the one that they've been looking for. Yeah, she was killed by illegal immigrants. This doesn't shock anybody, does it? And I think we need a wall. I think our borders should be protected. I think that there should be, people can't just come in all over the place and you can't possibly even vet them. It's not possible. But we need God to intervene right now for righteousness in our country. I mean, it's crazy. These people are crazy. And I pray you would. And we've studied the book of Esther back with the kids and this last several weeks. And, you know, God can do it. God did it for Esther and Mordecai and all the Jews. And I think God can still intervene and providentially change things and move his hand. And you guys need to beg God to do that tonight. All right, God bless you. Bill?